And welcome to this week's edition of Style and Empowerment Chat with Laura and Friends Radio. Thank you for tuning in all around the world. So just at the top of the show, I want to announce, we're very excited to say that we have a new syndicate and distributor of Style and Empowerment Chat with Laura and Friends. So welcome to all of my new listeners in the Philippines at Radio Patas 91.7. So excited to have you part of the family. Now, of course, you can like and follow the Style and Empowerment Chat with Laura and Friends Facebook page, and follow me on Instagram at the Laura Mazurek if you have commentary, show suggestions, song requests, feedback, you know, hit me up on all my social media. So we're so excited to have now, what, six, you know, I'm starting to lose track on your station. So we thank you for everyone who follows us and listens to us every week. So we're excited. We're going to be broadcasting. We actually already started, so you can catch older episodes of our show every day, well, every evening, 7 p.m. Eastern Time on Radio Patas 91.7 in the Philippines. So you can listen from wherever you are, download the mobile app, or visit the website. So I'm really excited. Some nice announcements in Philly this week. So welcome America, of course, which is a tradition here in Philadelphia in the month of July. It's a week-long festival, traditionally with family, family-friendly events happening on the parkway and culminating with the July 4th parade and concert, which always has some great celebrity performing for free on the foot of the Art Museum steps. So, of course, last July, we had to forego all of those traditional activities because of COVID, but now that more people are starting to get vaccinated and the curve is starting to flatten, we're not where we need to be yet, but we're closer. So the city just announced yesterday that Wawa Welcome America will be back, and instead of just being a week long, I think they're trying to make up for the ground they lost last year. So they've actually extended it. It's going to be almost a month long of activities starting on June 19th, which of course is Juneteenth. And there's going to be a lot of great things going on in the city in partnership with the Wawa Welcome America Festival. So there's a separate festival called the Broad and Market Festival, which is going to be going on between June 19th and 20th. You'll also be able to get free admission to the African American Museum of History here in Philadelphia from the 19th to, I believe, the 22nd. And they just announced that the headliner of this year's Wawa Welcome America concert on July 4th is none other than Bebe Rexha. So excited about that. So we'll have some good music to look forward to. So of course you can visit if you're in the Philadelphia tri-state area, you can visit the Wawa Welcome America website to check out all the developing updates. So we have some really cool kind of female empowerment iconic biographies coming out this month. So Mary J. Blige just excuse me, I had some water go down the wrong pipe. Mary J. Blige just announced and released a trailer for a new documentary that she produced called My Life, which will be debuting on Amazon Prime June 29th. So it's going to show a behind-the-scenes look at the creating of the iconic album My Life and what was going on in her life at the time, marital struggles, substance abuse issues she was dealing with, self-esteem issues, and how she got past all those things in her life and channeled it into that iconic album. Now talking about another icon of athletics. So comedian and Grammy winner and sometimes talk show host, MC Tiffany Haddish just announced that she will be portraying the iconic women's track and field star Florence Joyner in an upcoming biopic, which she'll be producing. And so, of course, for those of you who didn't come up in the 80s, that iconic time in track and field with Carl Lewis, Jackie Joyner Kersee, Flo Jo, these were just powerhouses of track and field. So Flo Jo won 2 gold medals in both the 100 meter and 200 meter dash in the 1988 Olympics. There are still several track records that she still holds to this day. And she passed away in 1988 of a seizure. Tiffany Haddish was saying in a recent statement that she's committed to just keeping the legacy and importance of the mark that Flo Jo left on women's sports. Florence Griffith and Jackie Joyner also was just stunning women, just so beautiful and elegant, and off the track field, they were just fashionistas and just had such great magnetism, which also just really added to both of them at the time becoming sports icons. So, speaking of icons, I'm really excited for this week's show. So, of course, we are right in the middle of Black Music Month. So, today I am going to take you back through a delightful time machine, and we're going to talk about all the iconic, influential albums, the most influential albums of the 1990s, not only their musical influence and importance, but also their influence on pop culture, and playing you some of my favorite cuts from each album. Of course, we only have 2 hours, so I couldn't list all of them, but today I have a top seven of the most important and influential R&B albums of the 1990s. So we're going to kind of go in chronological order. Now, the great thing about the 90s as opposed to the R&B scene of today, you know, in the 90s you had many subgenres. You had the classic lush R&B coming off of the 80s, but then you had more of the new jack swing, you had neo soul, you had the beginning of the R&B hip-hop fusion, you had house music R&B, you know, more of your dance R&B, but the streamline, like, carrying thread of all the R&B artists who came up in the 90s, as opposed to a lot of the ones today, is they all had such charisma, stage presence. They enunciated, you can understand what they're singing. There was an, all of the production tricks that is popular with a lot of artists today, where they just modulate and create a voice. The artists who rose to fame in that time period, these are artists who could sing, had just real vocal pipes. They were creative artists as well, visually. This was before social media, so MTV and videos were a key part of the marketing of albums and elevating artists to celebrity status. The videos were an integral part of selling albums and then making appearances on the popular talk shows like Arsenio Hall and The Tonight Show and what have you. And this was, you know, before YouTube, before Instagram, when if you couldn't sing, if you couldn't engage a crowd, you just weren't going to go anywhere. So the first album that we're going to spotlight is, I feel this is one of the most important R&B albums, even just larger than the 90s, Janet Jackson's Rhythm Nation 1814. Now, this album is special because though it was initially released in 1989, many of the singles, which we're going to discuss, were released into the 90s, so between 90 and 93. So it does actually then technically classify as being an influential R&B album of the 90s. So this album was a concept album, both musically and the videos as well. It was the Rhythm Nation 1814 was the very first concept album in the genre of R&B, and also from a female. Janet Jackson at that time, and Jimmy Jam, and Terry Lewis, they just were groundbreakers, visionaries. No one was doing what Janet Jackson did, not only musically, but with the visual accompaniment of Rhythm Nation. So it was a collaboration with Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis. She actually moved to, I think it was Minneapolis, to record the album. And she drew inspiration from various social issues, poverty, racism, violence, colorism, as well as messages of optimism, hope, love, romance, utopia, you know, a hope for a better world, and that we all, if we want to make this world a better place, we all have to take a stake in making it better. So the album encompassed many styles, from hard rock, actually Slash from Guns N' Roses played the guitar riff on Black Cat. And she also was unique in that too, because she was the first R&B artist and the first female artist to incorporate hard rock into her songs. Rhythm Nation also incorporated pop, dance, new jack swing, which of course was emerging in the 90s, and industrial music. So this album literally had something for everybody in it. And it's the only album in history of the US Billboard 100 charts to have singles, seven commercial singles, over 3 years. So there's no other album that has had several singles spread out over 3 years. So some of the singles off of Rhythm Nation, of course, which were so influential, were Escapade, Black Cat, Love Will Never Do Without You, of course, Rhythm Nation. So these songs all were released as singles and charted from 1989 through 1991. And some of the other big hits from Rhythm Nation include All Right and Come Back to Me. The album was certified platinum 6 times. And it sold over 12 million copies worldwide, which is a phenomenal feat for any artist, but especially as a woman, and especially in the 80s, where, you know, sexism was rampant in both the music and film industries, and where, you know, we were women of that generation were told and that, oh, well, you're not going to sell as much as a man, and, you know, your talent isn't as viable as male artists. The music videos further elevated the impact of Rhythm Nation. It was also accompanied with a documentary. The album was very dance heavy, and it also, you know, influenced fashion. Everybody during that time was rocking the black baseball cap, the military jackets, the one earring with the hoop and cross and the other earring. And it also really influenced dance trends in the clubs. You know, the music videos were really also such a marketing tool of the album. Like, it made the lyrics just pop off the page. Half of the videos were in black and white, like Rhythm Nation and Love Will Never Do Without You, and Miss You Much, which was another big hit off of that album. And then the other half, the more lighthearted songs like Escapade, were in color. And that was a conscious choice, marketing-wise. The album received 9 Grammy nominations. Janet was the first woman to be nominated as a producer of the year at the Grammys. And the album is in the Library of Congress. Janet Jackson, of course, was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 2021. And she really also was one of the first R&B artists to incorporate messages of feminism and female empowerment and sexual liberation into her lyrics and videos. She was the first female artist to incorporate messages of what's going on in the world, I'm saying within the R&B genre. She was the first artist to really commentate and ask the world to take responsibility for the troubles and struggles going on in this world. The music videos were epic with this album, still hold up today. And then, of course, many of the songs had remixes that hit the clubs. And then this album was also really important because it was one of the first albums in R&B, and specifically also from a female R&B artist, to cross over in all charts, culture, ages. This album really represented the teenagers and young college kids, the youth at the time, but it had a lot of deep messages that resonated with adults and opened up a lot of dialogue and conversation about the issues going on in the world. Sadly, many of the things we're still fighting to change today. Rhythm Nation was like bold, confident, just no apologies, saying, hey, this is my viewpoint. And like I said, it influenced fashion, it influenced music trends, it influenced just women in music, and it kind of shook up the industry at the time of what was possible for an artist to create. Janet Jackson at the time also, you know, was involved in many children's charities through the messages of Rhythm Nation. And it really inspired many artists for generations to come. So we're going to jump into our Janet Pocket. And then when we come back, we're going to continue our profiles of the most influential R&B albums of the 1990s. And we're just taking you through a great time tunnel of fantastic music. Keep it locked in. We'll be right back after this.
Like an arrow through my heart, it's the pain I feel. I feel an arrow, we're apart. Not to say that I'm in love with you, but who's to say that I'm not? Just know that it feels wrong when I'm away too long. It makes my body hot. So let me tell you, baby, I'll tell you, mama, I'll tell your friends, I'll tell anyone who's I can comprehend. Send it in a letter, baby, tell you on the phone. I'm not the kind of girl who likes to be alone. I miss you much. Oh, I miss you much.
I really miss you much.
I miss you much.
I miss you much.
Oh,
baby,
miss you much.
I really miss you much.
I miss too much.
I'm rushing home just as soon as I can. I'm rushing home to see your smiling face and feel your warm embrace. It makes me feel so good. So I'll tell you, baby.
I'll tell your mama. I'll tell your friends.
I'll tell your friends.
I'll tell anyone who's I can comprehend.
I miss you much.
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 tell the world I miss you.
My friends think we're opposites, falling in and out of love. They all said we never last, still we managed to stay together. There's no easy explanation for it, but whenever there's a problem, we always work it out somehow. Work it out somehow. They said it wouldn't last. We have to prove them wrong. 'Cause I've learned in the past that love would never do without you. Other guys have tried before to replace you as my lover. I never did. I have a doubt. A boy, it's you.
Continue our celebration of Black Music Month, Black excellence, and just groundbreakers and icons who helped to shape the R&B landscape of today. So we're just spotlighting the amazing Janet Jackson and the musical and cultural impact of her iconic conceptual album, Rhythm Nation 1814. So now we're going to move on to our next queen and icon, Mary J. Blige, who of course burst on the scene in 1992 with her iconic album, What's the 411, as she was discovered by Sean Combs, P. Diddy, or Brother Love, whatever he's calling himself nowadays, and the late and great.
One Love was on.
Yeah, Diddy One Love, and Diddy, and P. Diddy, and Diddy Boy, and this and that, whatever, you know. So, of course, Mary J. Blige was discovered by Andre Harrell and Uptown Records, and later was signed to Bad Boy, Diddy's label. So, of course, Mary J. Blige is credited as the queen and founder of the hip-hop soul genre. So what's the 411 was so groundbreaking musically because it literally created a new genre within R&B, incorporating elements of traditional soul and hip-hop beats and riffs. And it was very heavily sampled with hip-hop beats and overlaid with Mary's just amazing, gritty, powerful vocals. It was produced by Puff Daddy, and she really was one of the artists that launched Uptown Records to be the cultural powerhouse that it was in the 90s, launching the careers of a Heavy D, I'll Be Sure. Of course, Bad Boy would later launch the careers of Biggie, Little Kim, Mace, and so many other artists, Day 26. But really, Mary J. Blige was the blueprint. She was the first artist on both of those labels just to have massive, massive success and crossover, just like with Rhythm Nation. It crossed over to social influences of all socioeconomic backgrounds and the clubs, the schools. Everybody was playing What's the 411. So she really took the brand to a whole nother level with her crossover appeal. And this actually was her first top 10 hit, Real Love, which was one of the big songs off of that CD. It was certified gold in 1992. Some of the other big hits from What's the 411 was You Remind Me. And that was, you know, her first number one single. Reminisce was really a huge single off of that album. And her remake of the Chaka Khan classic Sweet Thing, in that album she showed her spectrum from kind of like the gritty street vibe to soulful romantic R&B. Another one of the big singles off of What's the 411 was No Limit. What's the 411 inspired Mariah Carey and Madonna to incorporate more hip-hop into their brands of pop. So back then in the 90s, it was very much about categorizing the genres. You had pop over here, you had R&B over here, you had rock over here, you had hip hop over here. But Janet Jackson and Mary J. Blige were really groundbreakers because in their own ways, in their respective albums, they were bringing in different other musical elements and genres that at that time, record label executives thought, well, that's a risk. Nobody's done that before. That's not how it's done. Let's just keep kind of doing things the same way. And that's going to guarantee we're going to make money. And then, of course, Mary J. Blige with What's the 411. Also, she, in the beginning part of her career, image and fashion-wise, she was more of a tomboy. It wasn't until later albums like My Life and Happy that she just kind of blossomed within her glam side. But with her first initial album, it also had a very street edge to it with the videos and the dance choreography for the performances and all the different talk shows and MTV. Knee pads was a big, big trend that Mary J. Blige started, I remember back then, because she would be wearing these short shorts and backwards baseball hat and knee pads, in part because she was doing all these athletic dance routines. But that definitely was a fashion moment back then in the early 90s. So Mary J. Blige definitely influenced trends in fashion and film and culture. Many of those songs were in various films of the time. She also was really one of the female artists like Janet Jackson who helped to lift MTV in the earlier days to really be culturally significant, influencing pop culture. Of course, What's the 411 incorporated Redman and remixes. And again, she was, at that time, Puffy, from a production angle, was doing things that were new, that people really weren't doing. And that kind of was a sister branch to what I call like the glam hip hop of the time, where everything was kind of shiny in the videos and these remixes with the hip hop artists over the R&B riffs and incorporating street edge, but then also like the aspirational glam, you know, the big puffy workout suits and floating in the air, and everything was shiny and glossy with these R&B remixes. Well, that was a branch off of the tree of Mary J. Blige and the new sound that they created together. So, and it was just such a powerhouse album with such amazing vocals. Again, the early and mid 90s was an amazing time for R&B because there weren't the production tricks and modulation and stacking of vocals that you hear now, where you're not really sure if an artist actually can sing, actually has great pipes. In the 90s, you know, again, like these artists had to have powerhouse vocals to get signed, to stand out from the pack, and have a distinct voice in their marketing and what they were bringing to the table. You know, what Mary J. Blige brought to the table in the 90s was being a strong female, just coming on, you know, hard and strong with her perspective and her vocals, and just being unapologetic. Like, I'm here, this is what I have to say. I'm not apologizing for being a woman. I'm not shying away from the mic. And you know, either basically like it or get off the train. And Mary J. Blige gave permission in the early 90s for a lot of women to, as did Janet Jackson with Rhythm Nation, to stand up and stand in their own space as a woman and not be afraid to put on an image of strength and speak up in their own lives and just not shy away and not feel that they're any less than. Like, these were strong women and talented women, beautiful women, socially impactful women, stylish women who are giving the okay to other teenagers and women of all ages, that is, it is not only more than okay to be strong in your voice and who you are and to expect respect. That's the other big thing that was culturally significant and impactful, especially in the 90s, like we said, where it was an era that was rampant with sexism. And it was way before the Me Too movement, happened. Mary J. Blige and Janet Jackson with these albums were coming out and saying, we are women, we are strong, we are beautiful, we're not going to apologize for that, we're not going to shy away in the corner, we have as much talent and power as men, and they proved it with the numbers. Before that, besides Whitney Houston, who was just kind of coming out and becoming like superstar status around at that time as well. You know, you didn't have female artists that were selling millions and millions and millions of records in the R&B genre. So Mary J. Blige and Janet Jackson at that time period, they were some of the first to do it. So we perpetually, you know, should be giving these queens their flowers and due, not just, you know, in June, but, you know, ongoing. So we're going to jump into our What's the 411 break and spotlight some of my favorite songs from that influential CD. And then when we come back, you know, then we're going to talk about some of Philly's own artists who made a really big impact on the history and culture of R&B. So keep it locked in to Style and Empowerment Chat with Lauren Friends Radio, and we'll be right back after this.
You remind me. in a bar, strolling home in hand, eating cotton candy from the candy man. I got a flashback, counterattack, hugs and kisses, love but don't lack. Deja vu of me hugging you, holding you, and squeezing you. Memories reminding me of you.
Empowerment Chat with Laura and Friends. We have you deep in the 90s groove. You know, over 30 years ago, and these songs still hold up, and the vocals are still amazing. And that's really reflective of iconic artists. So now, continuing our ride down the influential 90s R&B albums as we continue our celebration of Black Music Month and all of the iconic artists who have paved the way for so many others and influenced fashion and pop culture and music. So our next spotlight of influential, iconic R&B albums, none other than Philly's own Boyz II Men. So of course, they have had several CDs that are important and influential, but it all started with Coolie High Harmony, released in 1991 on Motown Records, written by the group and produced by Dallas Austin, who of course produced many mega hits for TLC, Monica and Brandy. The album brought back sounds of doo-wop of the 50s and 60s mixed with contemporary R&B styling. The sound just really was such a juggernaut in the 90s. I mean, I remember they won 2 Grammys for this album, and lots of American Music Awards and MTV Music Awards. They were all over every award show, performing all the big hits from this album. The album peaked at number 3 and had 5 top 10 singles. It's So Hard to Say Goodbye, A Motown Philly, End of the Road. Of course, some of the other standout songs from that song, that CD, were In the Still of the Night, Ooh Ah. And of course, the End of the Road just had such huge, overwhelming success internationally. And it's considered one of the most successful songs of all time. It spent 13 weeks at number 1 on the Billboard charts. At the time, it broke chart-topping of records previously only held by the Beatles and Michael Jackson. So can you imagine your debut album, your introduction into the world and pop culture was so successful that you literally broke chart-selling records set by the Beatles, which, you know, who are one of the most respected and successful groups of all time. And of course, it would go on to be certified platinum and won 2 Grammys. It's been certified, the album has been certified 9 times platinum. And just, it influenced so many groups. I mean, Boyz II Men's success at that time, it made way for groups like Silk and Shy, High Five, Jodeci, though of course Jodeci was with Uptown Records and had more of a gritty R&B sound, more street infused sound, a little more like a raunchier, sexually depictive sound, whereas Boyz II Men, they were a little bit more lush. At least in the beginning, but they had such wide stream success that it really brought back the surgence of the R&B boy band in the 90s and opened up the charts to many other artists. Of course, Wanye did a duet with Brandy at that time, Broken Hearted. They later went on to have duets with Mariah Carey. But all of that was a jump off from just the groundbreaking success of Boyz II Men's first album, Coolie High Harmony. It really had a distinctive sound at the time. The four-part harmony or five-part harmony was really what was at the core of the success of these songs and them as a group. And again, this is at a time where you had to be able to sing to be successful and have stage presence and express yourself in a way that really resonated with audiences. Boyz II Men also influenced fashion at that time. They really brought back the kind of collegiate, preppy school look, which later Kanye West took influence from with his first big CD, College Dropout, where he was going around with a school bag and the college varsity sweater. But Boyz II Men were the first to do that in popular music from a branding and fashion point of view. So at that time, they were all about like the college sweaters, the coordinated bright colored blazers and denim jeans and bow ties. And one of the things that Boyz II Men also, the effect they had on the music industry and the pop culture landscape from a performance style and interpersonally, they really, not only vocally, but so far as the way they visually put themselves together and conducted themselves, were a throwback to the Temptations, the Four Tops, all the great doo-wop groups, because they were always dressed impeccably. They always were put together, well-spoken, and they just carried themselves with elegance and grace, being young men at that time in their early 20s. And that definitely was a marketing choice in support of the whole branding image and music and niche that they were carving out. So, of course, Boyz II Men, since their debut in 1991, have gone on to just international superstardom. They have a street named after them here in Philadelphia. They've performed all around the world, just sold millions and millions and millions of records, inspired many artists since then, opened up the door for other artists as well. You know, they have co-produced and co-written almost all of their materials. They later would go on to leave Motown, then come back. They've done albums paying tribute to Motown and love songs. They now have a residency in Las Vegas, but it all started with the groundbreaking CD, Coolie High Harmony. So many great songs. I picked two of my favorites. So we're gonna take you back, you know, give you a little end of the road as we continue our spotlight of the most iconic and influential R&B albums of the 90s. So enjoy this flashback, and we'll be right back after this.
We belong together, and you know that I'm right. Why do you play with my heart? Why do you play with my mind? Said we'd be forever, said it never died. How could you saying goodbye
when I can't sleep at night without holding you tight? Girl, each time I try, I just break down and die. Pain in my head, oh, I'd rather be dead. Spending an hour on your love.
Although we love to be in the road,
to Style and Empowerment Chat with Laura and Friends, and we're just giving you a great dose of the iconic Boyz II Men. Of course, It's So Hard to Say Goodbye was written in tribute to their road manager at the time, Khalil Roundtree, and just was such a humongous hit, not only on the Billboard charts, but also on MTV, all the countdown shows at the time, and just spent weeks and weeks and weeks at the top of the charts. Literally, in that time period in the early 90s, you couldn't turn on the radio without hearing one of those two songs from Boyz II Men. So now moving on to our next spotlight of the iconic influential R&B albums of the 1990s. We're going to talk about the most successful girl group of all time, TLC. So, of course, they burst onto the scene with their debut album, Ooh, on the TLC Tip, which was just kind of a fun, fluffy, kind of youth-orientated CD. But the album Crazy Sexy Cool, which was the album that took the group to a whole nother level, becoming culturally influential, just breaking all kinds of sales charts, and being groundbreakers in R&B. So Crazy Sexy Cool was again produced by Dallas Austin and Babyface and Jermaine Dupri. And it featured hip-hop beats, fun, deep grooves, and a smooth production sound. The album spent 2 years on the Billboard 200. Can you think of an artist today that, like Janet Jackson and TLC, their album has spent 2 years on the charts? This is just phenomenal. It goes beyond gender and genre. Just such an amazing feat of accomplishment. It was certified platinum 12 times. TLC was the first girl group to really reach diamond status, with their album selling over 14 million copies worldwide. It is considered the best-selling album by an American girl group. So they surpassed the Supremes, who up until that time in the 90s was considered commercially the most successful girl group in the U.S. And, of course, Destiny's Child also had tremendous success in the 90s, hitting so many sales records. But TLC is the best-selling, Crazy Sexy Cool is the best-selling album up until today of an American girl group. And the sound of this album was a little bit more adult, a little spicier than their debut album. It had songs with messages about female sexual empowerment, and knowing your power as a woman, within life and within, you know, your own sexuality. Dallas Austin specifically wrote the songs with the female perspective. I was in mind on these topics of sex and romance and relationships. I was, though, find it interesting when they say, oh, he's writing from a female perspective, rather than actually getting a woman songwriter to write from a female perspective. I kind of feel like, well, how could a man write from a female's perspective? But again, you know, Dallas Austin was the hot producer and songwriter at the time and launched so many important careers, specifically female careers. And the videos also were more sexy. The TLC's first CD, Ooh on the TLC Tip, they were in baggy clothes and kind of this sort of like asexual girl around the way, tomboy kind of styling. But with the Crazy Sexy Cool album, from the album to the marketing to the videos, they were in more form-fitting clothes. TLC was one of the groups because they were so popular. You know, in a lot of their videos, T-Boz and Chili and Left Eye too would wear crop tops. So they were really impacted fashion at that time. Everything was like shiny and metallic and these crop tops. So that really influenced fashion at the time. So some of the huge and impactful singles from that album were Red Light Special, which had a very sexy, sultry tone to it, and the video to it, it took place in a strip, you know, a strip club, and was kind of from the female perspective. And with that, there was some backstory there, because that song apparently was inspired by, Creep. Actually, so Creep was another huge hit off of that CD, and of course they were all in their pajamas, these shiny silk PJs, and then you had that trumpet player jumping up in the air. And actually, a lot of TLC's music videos, you saw other artists of the contemporaries really kind of copying a lot of some of the elements that were in their videos. So Creep was the song that was actually inspired by some relationship issues that T-Boz was having at the time, with cheating and fidelity. And in the video, Left Eye actually has a piece of tape over her mouth, and in the imagery, because Left Eye actually took issue with that song and the message of the song encouraging people to cheat. And she was at the time like, look, I'm about monogamy. I'm not going to encourage women to go and cheat on their man or say it's okay if they cheat. So she really didn't put much vocal on that song, particular song off the album, out of protest. Now, some of the other impactful songs from that CD include Waterfalls. Waterfalls was such a huge hit, the video was important because it was one of the first videos to incorporate computer CGI effects in the video. It was one of the first videos to use green screens. And, you know, if you remember, like, the girls were all in this kind of tropical oasis with waterfalls, and then they're in their, like, crop top outfits and everything. But Waterfalls also had a social conscious element woven through, which was also a first for the group at the time. So, you know, TLC was a group that was heavy on the vocals, but also incorporated glam and, you know, girl power, a lot of athleticism in their dance styles. And their albums were huge. Like, Crazy Sexy Cool, they also incorporated a lot of kind of, I want to say, like, space themes, like kind of robot and outer space and stuff in their costumes and a lot of the word show performances. So we're going to take another musical break. So we're going to jump into our TLC pocket. So, we're not. Okay, so, well, we're just going to rearrange for a second. That's okay. So, all right. So the next one, I thought I sent those over. So apparently, I did not. So then the next person we're gonna talk about that is really influential CD, and we'll dig up a little creep in a second, is Mariah Carey. And Butterfly. So that was released in 1997. Butterfly was Mariah's first album after breaking away from her controlling husband, Tommy Mottola, who was the CEO of Sony Records. Of course, Mariah released her memoirs this year, talking all about her relationship with Tommy Mottola. It became a New York Times bestseller. She has an accompanying documentary on YouTube, talking all about the things that she was going on at that time in her life and relationship. But Butterfly was full of themes of breaking free of things that bind you, sexual liberation, healing from broken relationships. The album was the first R&B album to blend influences of hip-hop, pop, and R&B. It created a new genre that many artists have followed today. She was the first R&B star to make the hip-hop remixes, just like Mary J. Blige, but Mariah took the hip-hop R&B remix to a whole nother level. She was really the first to bring that mainstream. The album was produced by Sean Combs, Q-Tip, and Missy Misdemeanor Elliott. And the album was certified 5 times platinum, and it sold 10 million copies worldwide. Some of the important singles from Butterfly include Honey. Of course, she did a remix with Jay-Z and Nas, which just, you know, was so groundbreaking at the time. And the video had this whole James Bond element. And this was where Mariah was kind of coming into her own, because when she was with Tommy Mottola, of course, he always wanted her buttoned up and, you know, not show much. And she's there in her gold bathing suit. And she's coming out of this mansion, which was supposed to symbolize her breaking free from the oppressive living situation with Tommy Mottola. And she's all on her water scooter and everything, and just all glam. And it took Mariah, transitioned her more into the artist that she is today. Breakdown and My All were also some really important singles off of that album. So we're going to jump into a Mariah moment, going back like babies in pacifiers. Keep it locked in, and we're going to continue our journey down the most influential R&B albums.
Sleepless alert to tonight. If it's wrong to love you, then my heart just won't let me be right. 'Cause I'm drowned in you, and I won't pull through without you by my side. I'd give my all to have just one more night. I'll risk my life to be
In the world couldn't even amount to a teaspoon of honey when it melt your mouth.
That's right.
The locks from Mariah's, you checking us out? You know the deal, a few mil every time she come out. With her blowing and us flowing, it ain't nothing else left to talk about but a whole lot of dough.
And every coming to fair, we there, keeping your hands in the air like we just don't care. Don't be a liar, would you change your attire? Get a farm like Hillshire with a honey like Mariah. Escape to the ranch and ride a horse, then come back to the city pushing the Rolls Royce.
Thank you.
with puff and blow your house down. Bring that Harlem world sound directly to your town. In fact, this is why I act like that. I ain't dropped one single and made his money back. I rock so swell, I gotta prevail. First rap superstar, dominating pop sales. You never wish me well, cause I start to sell. Now live with pretty women in a Swiss hotel. And girls, that mean a lot. I get them from the shop, buy them everything they got. From the jeans to the watch. If you wanna be my missus, you got to make me wanna spoil you with my bitches. And you could tell that Mace is real, cause he do real things. And I make things average look real mean when they come the sex, I got the real thing. So when you cover your mouth, they hear you still scream. All the world, we won't stop. And Mariah, you're on fire. All the world, we won't stop. So Mariah, take us higher. All the world, we won't stop. And Mariah, you're on fire. All the world, we won't stop. So Mariah, take us higher.
What we're gonna do right here is we're gonna smooth it out. Come on. MC. And she won't stop.
Yes. Me again.
Hope you are enjoying yourself as we take you all up and down and through and around some of the most amazing music on the R&B landscape. The next CD, or well, of course, back then it was album. We want to talk about just a groundbreaking artist herself. The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill, released in 1998. This was the solo debut of singer and rapper, activist, actress Lauryn Hill, who of course rose to fame with the hip-hop reggae-infused group The Fugees with Wyclef and Praz, with their big hits Foo La La and Refugee Song in the late 90s. She decided to go solo. The album was a blend of neo-soul, R&B, and reggae, and it touched on Lauryn's pregnancy and the turmoil within her former group, the Fugees, along with the themes of love and God and spirituality. The album debuted as number one on the Billboard Top 200 charts and sold 422,000 copies in its first week, which broke a record for first week sales by a female artist. Some of the huge songs off of that CD Was Doo-Wop, That Thing You Do, X Factor, Everything Is Everything. Oh, and of course, that had that amazing powerhouse piano beat, played by John Legend, who would go on to become an R&B superstar himself. So John Legend was actually in high school at the time that he was chosen to play piano on that influential album. Of course, the video to Everything Is Everything was just so creative and groundbreaking at the time. It featured Lauryn Hill walking through a city, and then as the camera pulled back, the city was actually an album. So it was dual messages and just so creative. And so that album really fused together messages of social consciousness with pop music, soul flair. These songs crossed over from the adult contemporary charts to the pop charts to the R&B charts to what they call mainstream radio. And the video was just, of that particular song was just so huge. I know it was nominated for Video of the Year that year. I can't remember if it won. But, you know, she also really was acclaimed for her being a visual artist. The other big song off of that song, off of that CD was Zion, named after her son, and just talking about the impact of motherhood on her life. And I remember in that video, it was very simplistic, but impactful. She was dressed all in white, in some linen pants, and just her dreadlocks and an ankh necklace with her dreads. And she was just kind of sitting there singing and emoting and reflecting on being a mother. But it was very sleek and elegant. But the way that it was shot with the camera angles, it really was emotionally stirring when you watched the video. And of course, Doo-Wop, That Thing You Do, also was a huge music video, influenced fashion. I remember she did a kind of retro throwback with that, kind of incorporating the doo-wop, but with hip-hop flavor, which you could see the influence from that video years later in Outkast with their big hit, Hey Ya, where they did the kind of doo-wop-y mixed with the urban edge. And in the video, the throwback feel was a direct jump off from the influence of Doo-Wop, That Thing You Do. Lauryn Hill was just also just so widely respected as a songwriter, and just blew up the industry, and was that really the big hot artist at the time. And then she later would evolve into issues with addiction and other battles within her life. A few years ago, the Fugees actually reunited at a concert performance of hers, and there's rumors that they might actually come back together to do an album. Lauryn Hill also pulled heavily from the influences of Bob Marley and just really wove together a lot of genres to create a new sound. These were just big, bold sounds, lush layering with percussions and horns mixed in with more urban edge to it as well. So we're gonna give you a little bit of the greatness of Miss Lauryn Hill, L Boogie, and then when we come back, we're gonna talk about the amazing Sade. So keep it locked into Style and Empowerment Chat with Lauren Friends Radio, and we'll be right back after this.
Practice extending across the atlas. I begat this, flipping in together on the dirty mattress. You can't match this, rapper slash actress, more powerful than two Cleopatra. Bomb graffiti on the tomb of Nefertiti. MCs ain't ready to take it to the Serengeti. My rhymes is heavy like the mind of Sister Betty. L Boogie spars with stars and constellations, then came down for a little conversation. Adjacent to the king, fear no human being. Roll with cherubims to Nassau Coliseum. Now hear this mixture where hip hop meets scripture. Develop a negative into a positive picture.
Now everything is everything.
Sometimes it seems
we'll touch that dream, we'll touch that
but
dream.
Things come slow and not at all.
They come slow,
and the ones on time
won't make it stop.
So convinced that they might fall.
Not for everybody.
Let's love ourselves and we can't fail.
Continue our spotlight on some of the most influential R&B albums of the 90s. So we can have a list of influential artists and albums without spotlighting the incomparable, beautiful, amazing Sade. So Love Deluxe, released in 1992, was a really groundbreaking album. It surged with emotion and lush ambient music. The album incorporated cool jazz with Sade's sultry, smooth, icy vocals, and it had a lot of instrumentation and guitar solos. It was very commercially successful. Again, Sade is another artist who really used the visual medium of music videos and fashion as a counterpart of the music. So some of the huge singles off Love Deluxe include No Ordinary Love. Of course, that was in black and white, and she was in this white wedding gown and kind of running across the desert, a very dramatic and elegant visuals. The Kiss of Life, Cherish the Day. Now, following the release of the success of Love Deluxe, the band took a 7-year break, during which Sade had her first child. The other members of the band would go on to form the band Sweetback. And so here's where you're going to get some nuggets of information you might not know. It's really interesting if you do your research just how many producers and artists and background musicians are interconnected to other huge artists. Now, of course, Sade is, people actually confused. Sade is the name of the group, but also the name of the lead singer. Sade is just known for her mixture of smooth jazz tonality with very expressive R&B. She's just so beautiful. Love Deluxe really was just so moody and sultry and a more mellow sound than the R&B that was happening in the 90s. But again, one of the things that was so great in the 90s was there were so many different shades and lanes of R&B, so many different sounds. You had the smooth jazzy R&B of Sade. At the same time, you had the hip-hop infused R&B of Mary J. Blige. At the same point, you had the more pop-centric, but of Rhythm Nation. So it's not like today, where in a lot of ways a lot of the music just kind of sounds the same, and you just don't have of the newer generation artists that just are the groundbreakers, like the Janet Jacksons, the Sades, the Lauryn Hills of this generation. Now, here's the fun fact that transitions us to our next and final spotlight. So, during the hiatus of Sade's group, after the massive success of Love Deluxe, and Sade just kind of wanted to take some time off to get away, her backup band formed a new band called Sweetback that played a major role in the development of Maxwell's career, providing much of the instrumentation and production work for Maxwell's first two albums, including his debut album, Urban Hang Suite, which is the last album to follow for us to close out with for our influential recap of R&B albums of the 1990s. So Maxwell's Urban Hang Suite was released in 1996. Maxwell wrote and produced the album himself, which that alone was a feat as a brand new artist getting the red light, green light rather, to write and produce your own stuff. That's something that normally the industry does not do for new artists. Combined elements of funk, jazz, soul, you can really like hear the thread between Sade and Maxwell and his early work, and you know, sound that Sweetback brought to his work that really was a thread from Love Deluxe and many of Sade's albums. So the album was a concept album, which again, you can see how Janet Jackson was influencing other artists. So yeah, the concept album, Urban Hang Suite, focused on the arc of an adult romance. So from the dating stage, infatuation stage, marriage, breakup, proposal. So the album was partially based on Maxwell's experiences in life, and he said in various interviews that he draws, like many artists, he draws a lot of his material and lyrics from his personal experiences in life. The album was a critical and commercial success, and it was certified 2x platinum. Some would argue that Hang Suite was Maxwell's best album. It just celebrated, I think, 30 years or so since its initial release, at least 20-ish years. So some of the big singles and breakout hits off of that album included Till the Cops Come Knocking, Ascension, Something Something, Sweet Lady. Of course, Something Something had a more kind of funky sound and fusion with all those kind of bongo drum sound. And Ascension is like the perpetual girl power, praise your woman anthem. You know, that was one of the things that also made Maxwell stand out in the landscape, that any of his lyrics are all, you know, positive, they're romantic, the chivalrous in tone, doting on the lady, earning her respect and attention, which are all timeless, great messages that still are relevant today. We're going to close out with Sade Maxwell Pocket. I hope today's show inspired you to go out and research some of these great artists or songs you haven't heard in a while, or maybe from my listeners from other parts of the world, songs you didn't know about. So go to your YouTube, Spotify, get into it, you know, dig into all this great music. So, of course, you can follow me on social media, on Instagram at The Laura Masaryk, on the Style and Empowerment Chat with Laura and Friends Facebook page. So, you know, we're always open to song requests, feedback, you know, topic suggestions, and all that good stuff. I hope you have a fantastic day. Again, we are so excited to now be a part of the Radio Patis 91.7 family. Until next time, stay inspired and stay purposeful. And we'll be back next week with more style, more fashion, more great music content and interviews. Have a fantastic day.
Take my heart and my love. Take wish I knew if I could be the one that you love forever and a day, baby. Oh yeah. And if there's a thing that you need for you and your blood,
nothing.